Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today is Tell Del Tuesday, where we introduce you to some of our members and share their experience with you. Get an idea if, you know, this is something you might be interested in. With me here today is Jeff and Elizabeth LaFlame out of San Antonio, Texas. Jeff and Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Hey, Del. Thanks for having us on.
All right, who's going to start this off? Let's talk about how you guys decided or when you guys decided in your life that you wanted to look into other alternate type investments like real estate. What brought you to us?
Well, I know when I first enlisted in the Navy, it was something that I kind of was interested in doing, was buying a house at every duty station, fixing it up while we lived in it. And then when we transferred, we rented out. And, so that was kind of the idea when we first started, and didn't quite pan out the way we wanted to, but that was the plan initially.
That's an interesting model. I've heard stuff like that before. So how did that work out, and what were the pros and cons of that plan?
So pros were, you know, we could use veterans benefits or military benefits to get a house with no down payment, and while we live there, do the work ourselves while we live there, and then rent it out once we moved. Downsides were, that first time we tried to do it, we bought the house in 2007. So it was right as the market shifted, and we ended up living in the house for about 7 years. And at that point, we just, you know, kind of called it. And I had gotten out of the Navy at that point too. It was right as we're getting out of the house, and we never ended up actually doing it. We just bought the house, tried fixing it up ourselves, and nothing. It never got rented out.
Yeah, it's interesting that how life does something like that. You decide to do something, and you pick the absolute worst year you could do it. The next year, the recession comes, real values crash.
Exactly.
And yet you're still back here. You're here again. So let's talk about that. That had to put a sour taste in your mouth. It didn't work the way you thought it was going to work. How did you come back from that and decide you wanted to do something else?
Yeah, so I know once we first moved to San Antonio, we had kind of heard about Lifestyles and started to kind of gain an interest in going. And we ended up going to one of the case studies, and David Fisher was teaching at the time. And I remember talking to him after the case study and kind of telling him our situation. And that house that we bought in 07, we ended up having to do a short sale at the end of it, even after 7 years. And I was talking to him, and he was like, well, you're not able to buy anything right now. Don't even bother signing up right now. Save your money and come back when you're able to buy. And that's kind of the route that we took, was we saved our money. We actually moved to Japan for a few years, took a job out there, and we're able to save up quite a bit while we're there, and came back. And as soon as we came back in 2020, we ended up signing up.
That's interesting. So for people out there that are listening and don't know what a short sale is, let's explain that to them. Because that's something that you don't hear that term thrown around very often, but actually that house must have really have gone down in value. Or actually, I don't even know how it got to be that expensive that it had that much of a difference. Tell us how that happened. I know it's a negative point of view, but I think people really want to know that so they can avoid that.
We bought the house in 07, just before the market tanked. It was in Virginia, so I think it was hit a little harder than Texas was. And we bought the house for $155,000. We did fix it up some and took care of it, you know. And when I actually had orders to move, and that was the justification for the short sale, because we couldn't rent it out. We looked at renting it out. It was going to be a loss every month if we rented it. We looked at selling it. It would have been a loss if we sold it. And since it was 0% down, we didn't, like, it would cost us money to sell it. So we sent the justification to do a short sale. We took a credit hit, and the bank took the loss on the money for how much they ended up, I think they ended up selling it for $100,000 or just under.
Wow. So they just wrote it off their books, and did they come after you for the money?
No, they didn't. It was just a credit hit, and I think it took us about, I think it was 2 or 3 years before we could buy another house.
Now, last question on this. You took the credit hit, so that it hurt your credit that happened. But one more thing. Sometimes when they do these write-downs, what they'll do is they'll take that loss, whatever that $50,000 loss was, and they'll credit it to you as debt forgiven, and that becomes a taxable offense. Did they do that in this case?
They didn't, but that might have been in part due to I was active duty, so it might have been the VA loan that kind of let it write off.
Gotcha. The active duty part is what forced you to make that decision. All right. Mm-hmm. All right, good. So now let's talk about when you decided to come back and do it again. What brought you back?
Jeff is relentless.
Yeah, I am.
He really just, real estate always was very interesting and exciting to him. I was the one that was very like, this sounds like a scam. We shouldn't do this. He wasn't deterred at all. After the short sale, he was like, you know, we're going to get there. We're going to do it. So he's really been a great motivator for both of us.
That's interesting. So Elizabeth, was it real estate was a scam or just Lifestyles Unlimited sound like a scam?
I thought I was interested in the idea of real estate. But when I went to the seminar initially that first time, I think in 2015,
I think it was 2015.
I thought it was a scam because I was like, this sounds too good to be true. I was like, this, you know, they're going to take our money. And I was very skeptical. And it took me a long time to come around. Even after we joined, I was still kind of getting cold feet. But it took me a while.
I like it. I love skeptical people. They're my favorite. All right. So let's talk about then. Did you go to the 2-day with Jeff when you first signed up?
I did, with David, yes. There? And I've been back a few times since that first time.
All right. So was it the presentation on the 2-day that you thought was a scam? It sounded too good to be true?
The 2-day was a lot more logical. When we went to the initial Thursday night meeting, it was a little more hyped up, and it was back when David Fisher had that bleach blonde hair. So, yeah, it was interesting. And then the 2-day was, like I said, more logical. I'm not a math person, so it definitely took me a while to wrap my mind around the way everything was calculated. And I think just that repetition of going back, of running deals, really helped me feel more comfortable with everything.
Okay. So, Jeff, since you weren't the skeptic, when you went to the 2-day, what was something that was an aha moment to you going, wow, that's what I missed, that's what I need, it's going to work now? But what was your aha moment?
You know, for me, I think it was seeing the implementation of hard money. I know I had heard about it in the past, and I kind of tried to look into it, but I didn't really understand it.
Let me please have a little insight into that fly on the wall kind of conversation you guys had after you came out of the 2-day. What did you guys discuss, and how did you end up making your plan of what you were going to do?
Yeah, I think the first time, I'm definitely the type A, where I see something shiny and I'm running straight for it. So Elizabeth helps keep me from making all the rash decisions and that don't pan out. But I was excited, and I know how it works. So I think for this one, I think I actually made a PowerPoint presentation, if I remember right, with pros and cons of signing up and why we should do it. And showed that to her.
He knows me really well. He knows that I would respond to a PowerPoint presentation. So
that is amazing. Do you guys have any kids?
Yes, we have two daughters. They're both teens right now.
All right, I'm going to make a joke. Did you have to have a PowerPoint presentation?
No.
Not for that one.
Not for
so
that
I did
one.
A PowerPoint presentation and made the point we probably should have some kids, okay? That was a bad joke. I just had to try it, though, see if it'd go over. All right, so we did the PowerPoint presentation. Did you talk her into doing it? And what did you decide you're going to do? I mean, there had to be, Elizabeth, what constraints did you put on him? You had to put some constraints. Well, we'll do it, but there's got to be a but in there.
I think I wasn't knowledgeable enough, honestly, at first to put constraints on him. I was more just like a looming shadow over what he was doing at first, to kind of just say no to everything initially. Like I said, Del, it took me a really long time to really understand. And I think I finally, what really clicked for me was when we reviewed, we like to have financial meetings throughout the year, even before Lifestyles. And when we were looking at the return on our investments, and I realized we're comparing that to the return on our equity or cash on cash. And I was like, wait, we can be making that much more. We can make our money work for us more. Why aren't we doing this? So that's really what finally convinced me, like, oh, we need to do this, once I understood that.
You know, that is one of the pages in the book on the 2-day is that very point, you know, return on your equity, net worth. And I'm interesting that the type B that you are grabbed that right off the page and ran with it. That's good. Glad you got that. So what did you guys decide to do for your first deal? Talk about how did you decide, or not how, but what step did you decide to take? I mean, you stick your toe in the water. How did you do that?
Yeah, so that first one, We went and looked at a lot of houses. Luckily, we were challenge members at the time, and luckily your realtors were very patient with us. And so we looked at a lot of houses, and I think it was, I went to one, and I want to say Elizabeth was working, so I went there. And I was looking at this house. It was in a neighborhood just like ours. You know, it really was very comparable to what we were used to and familiar with. It didn't require a lot of rehab or anything. And as we're sitting there talking to the general contractor, and he's like, look, if you don't want this one, let me know, because I kind of want to buy this. It's like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is something that we should jump on. And we, you know, I went back and went through the numbers with Elizabeth, and it really made sense. And like I said, it was a nice, solid middle-class neighborhood with, you know, I talked to the neighbors, and it was a good area with good returns. So we ended up moving on that one. It was pretty hard to, you know, kill the deal on it, I guess, to say it plainly.
So Elizabeth, how did you feel about the first one?
I was really scared. If something like that came across us today, I would have jumped on it immediately. But as that first one, I was pretty scared. But with the numbers they were showing me, with what the contractor was saying, I couldn't say no because it was that good of a deal. So I wanted to say no just out of fear, but I needed to get over it, you know, and jump in.
just on the basis of logic, I'm saying no, right? No to everything. You know how you never make a mistake? Is you never try anything.
That's
it's
right.
Easy. You never make a mistake. That's a type B. It's solemn oath. I will never, ever be wrong. Why? Because I'll never make a decision. Works every time. So you bought this one. Tell us about it. What kind of deal did you get? Who wants to go into the numbers? Jeff, are you the numbers guy, or is Elizabeth the numbers person?
I think she has the numbers with her.
All right.
I don't
tell
know about that one, but
I don't have the numbers for that one. So we sold it since then.
Okay. So what'd you buy it for? What'd you sell for? Can you remember that even?
Do you remember, Jeff?
I remember that one pretty well. So that one, we bought it around, I think it was just under 175. I think it was, we'll say 174. And it required maybe 10,000 worth of work. And it appraised at, I think it was like 190 something, 195. And, okay. You know, it was a little higher out of pocket. It cash flowed well. But since we bought that one in 2020, in 2021, we sold it. And I do remember the end number after closing costs and everything was said and done. We came out of pocket around 20 or 25,000 and walked away with over 30,000.
Okay.
So profit, mind you, profit.
Profit, not just the 25. I love it when people are not very motivated, or not, it's not the right word for it, are very conservative. So, well, we walked away with 30,000. The way you made that sound like is you put in 25, you got it, you walked out with 30. But what you're really saying, I believe, is you made 30 more than the 25 you put in?
Yes. So we walked away with about 55,000.
All right. Do you guys keep each other excited this way?
I know. I stay excited about it. I still listen to the radio show every day and you know, read up on it regularly.
All right. Let's talk about after that deal. By the way, did you do another deal before you sold that one? I'm trying to get to the second deal. What you did one, you felt good about it. Now, Elizabeth, you see it's real. It actually works. What did you do for the second one?
The second one, so I had begun teaching at this point.
I want to hear the whole story, and we're getting ready to go into break, so I'm going to cut you off here. We'll pick you right back up when we come back. We'll be right back with Jeff and Elizabeth and the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Working hard but still falling behind? Learn how real estate investing can help you build income and move forward with purpose. Text RADIO to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Jeff and Elizabeth LaFlame. And as we went to break, Elizabeth was sharing a story about the second property that they purchased. And Elizabeth, as we go in, bring everybody back in on this. We want to remind the people listening that you were the skeptic of all of this when you first started. Now we're getting your perspective. You've done one. One worked. What was your perspective on the second one? And tell us about it, the story.
So life got in the way after that first one. I started a new job, which really took up a lot of my time and brain space. So we actually ended up lapsing with our membership. I was very distracted, and Jeff was still kind of gung-ho, even though obviously we were busy as parents and with our jobs. But he did end up finding a duplex that we ended up purchasing during our membership lapse. And it wasn't my favorite, but it is cash flowing, and it's okay. The next one we did...
I'm not going to let you off the hook that easily. So why was it not your favorite? What was not as appealing to this one as the first one was?
Sure. I mean, I liked the duplex itself. The area was kind of mixed. So it's kind of in the middle of San Antonio on the east side. So it's a mix of renewing houses that are being renewed and houses that are really run down. What we learned after is how to analyze a duplex. There wasn't a lot of other duplexes in this area, so it was really hard to find comparables. So that would have been, that was a good lesson to learn as far as how to look at a duplex versus a single family home.
That's a good point, because they're not the same. All right, so you went on and did that one. What was the one after that you did like?
The third one we did was my favorite. So this one was just north of Floresville. So it was still in San Antonio, just on the edge. And we found it with holes in the walls, like exterior. You could climb from the outside to the inside on the side of the house because there was holes. It was a hoarder house. They had robbed the copper from inside. So it was just completely wrecked. But it was in a really nice middle working class neighborhood. And the numbers were pretty solid. The equity capture was great. And it was just great to do something nice for that neighborhood and still make money. But it was really nice to improve the neighborhood and take that eyesore and make it into a livable home for someone.
There is a lot of fulfillment there. There's no doubt. Let's talk about the numbers on this deal.
Yeah. So we purchased it for $87,000. The ARV is $214,000.
So for people that are listening that don't know the acronyms, ARV is after repaired value, what it's going to be worth after you do it. So what was the ARV again?
$214,000.
So 87 to 214. Boy, that's quite a spread there.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. Just, like I said, I like this one. The rehab was obviously a lot. However, our contractor did some magic, and the rehab only cost $73,550.
Okay. So it sounds like you're in for about $160,000 in the top of my head math.
Mm-hmm. And then it cash flows about $256 a month.
All right. So if you bought it for $87,000, you put in $70,000, that's $150,000, $160,000, somewhere in that area. And closing costs, we'll say we're in for $170,000. It's worth $215,000, $214,000. So you've picked up quite a bit of captured equity there. The cash flows also. Is it beautiful now? Did you make it beautiful?
It is beautiful. Well, it's as comparable to the neighborhood. We didn't want to over rehab, of course. But yes, it's definitely beautiful compared to how it was before.
Did you have anybody from the neighborhood come up to you while you were doing all this and talk to you and say thank you?
Yes, a lot of the neighbors were really excited. It sat there for years, so they were really excited to see it improved. And I think 2 to 3 neighbors came up and talked to Jeff while he was out there.
Well, you know, there's lots of ways you get paid in life. One of them is those kinds of feelings when people are excited about what you're doing, right?
Right.
So how many total houses have you done?
4 total. So we did one after this one, and we're currently looking for our next deal.
Okay, how'd the one after this work? How good was it?
That one did pretty well. We purchased, this one was near Lackland. We purchased it for about $110,000. The ARV is $194,000, and it's cash flowing at $206,000.
Excellent. All right, so now after you've done 4, I'm going to ask you, are you still a skeptic?
As far as the lifestyles matter, absolutely not. I think it's great.
All right. Well, then we're going to sidestep into another issue then, and that is, have you met people there? What do you think about the group of people that you're a part of?
I really like them.
Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
While she was working, I was the one going to most of the events. She would go when she had time, but... I mean, just the amount of information that people share. You can go there and ask them who their contractors are. I know our inspector is a member, and he's given us point of contacts. I mean, the people there are great and really helpful. And, you know, it makes you want to try to reciprocate as much as possible also. So new members or people that are kind of on the fence, you're trying to give them as much information as you can as well so that they can, you know, be successful.
So a lot of people find this to be true, that once they start doing this, that they can relate, or the people that they meet at Lifestyles are more relatable than other people out there. Now, you guys have got 2 different kinds of jobs. You're IT guy, you're a writer. You have personal friends. Have you accumulated any friendships from being members? And tell us about that, yes or no, and how good are they?
I mean, we see the same people at a lot of the events, and we'll go and stop and talk to them and ask them how they're doing. But I know there's a lot of people in the group. They'll do cruises together and see each other do. I mean, I see it on Facebook a lot of the time where they had a slumber party. I mean, the friendships are definitely there, but we've both been a little bit busier to do anything too much with the people, but we still try to make the events and see how everyone's doing while we're there.
Gotcha. Busy couple. You're both working, got kids. That's interesting. So when we look at the future here, where are you going with this now?
Yeah, you want to take this one, Elizabeth?
Sure. We're, this year, our goal is to buy a minimum of 2 properties, possibly 3. It kind of depends on how things pan out with the first 2. And then I think we're on the trajectory to become IROs a couple years down the road. I think that's what we would ideally like to do.
Okay. For those of you listening don't know what an IRO is, it's an independent real estate owner. We commonly equate that with apartment complexes. So you're already an IRO. You're already independent owners of real estate. But you, I think what you're saying is you're looking at apartments later on?
Yes. I think we'd like to have a smaller. We're also passive members. So we're in a couple multifamily deals as passive members. And we see the scale of economy, the benefit of having multiple units in one spot and the cash flow that comes with that. So that's pretty exciting, but we're not quite there yet.
That's interesting. So you've got some passive deals also. So tell us, let me look at my timer. We've got about a minute and a half here. Quickly, how did you decide which deals to get into? Were you more interested in who was doing the deal or the deal itself? We call that the jockey or the horse. Which one was more important to you?
That's hard to say because it's kind of both. Honestly, I can't really choose one or the other. Jeff, do you have any thoughts?
So I know I'll typically look at the deal. So I'll look at the horse first. And then from there, I'll do a deeper dive on the actual lead and see if that's someone that we want to invest with. We've met a lot of leads. There are some where I'm confident with them, even without seeing their deal. Obviously, I'd still take that into account. But I think it's kind of a hybrid, but I would say that the lead is the most important part.
So guys, just share with us, if you can, the difference in your mind about being an independent owner, like with the single family houses, as compared to being passive. What are the pros and cons between those two if somebody was thinking about doing this?
You go.
I was just going to say being a passive is really almost luxurious. You do have to read the reports that come through and make sure you're informed going into the deal. But, you know, you're not involved. You're not calling contractors. You're not dealing with tenants. So it's kind of a laid back approach, which is nice as long as you know how to analyze the deal going into it and are comfortable with the lead. And then I really like single family just because you have so much more control over the minutia of the deal and how you want to run it and the tenants that you put in it. So I think it's as far as how much work do you want to do. And then once it's rented, single family is pretty easy if you do everything right.
There's no doubt about that. So let's talk about why you guys might want to move into the multifamily someday and be an independent owner of a small apartment complex. What's making you think that's a direction you'd like to go?
We were just kind of thinking along the lines of the economies of scale, trying to manage, you know, 10 plus houses all scattered all over the city becomes a little more difficult than, hey, they're all in one place, one roof. So if you need to replace a roof, it's just the one roof. So it's just easier to maintain, and it helps you scale a lot better as well.
All right. Have you decided how far out that is before you're going to try to do something like that?
Like Elizabeth said, I'm usually the one that's looking constantly. So I've looked a couple times, and I run our numbers. I think it would probably be best case scenario 1 year, but I think even in a year we'd be really pushing our financial situation. So I'm thinking 2 or 3 years we'll probably be ready.
Okay. So you plan to buy 2 more houses until then?
At least the 2 more this year. We'll see how next year goes. We'll go back over our financial goals. We review them every quarter and make new ones every year. So
I'm going to ask Elizabeth this one. Looking back now, Elizabeth, would you have done more of this if you known what you know now?
As far as earlier in our real estate career, yes, absolutely. Yes, I would have.
What has given you the confidence now? What is it about what you've done that's given you confidence?
Well, everything was new to me before. I wasn't familiar with real estate. My background is in really the literary arts. So, you know, business, real estate was all very foreign to me. So it was really just getting used to the industry and seeing it work with my own eyes, seeing it work through the work that we did as a couple and hunting down these deals and and rehabbing them. And just seeing the returns and seeing one all the way through and selling it and seeing how well that worked has really made me a believer. So just, you just got to go and do it.
Did you guys have any outside influence? You know, sometimes the parents think it's crazy. What are you doing? Why would you do something so crazy as that? Or maybe your friends or people at work would say that, you know, and sometimes they're positive. Did you have any outside influence?
People would give us strange looks sometimes if it came up, or you could kind of see the skepticism in their eyes. If you tell them you're doing this and they kind of are like, oh, well, the market's really bad right now. And either, you know, if they're interested, we'll try to explain. But usually it's just like, well, you know, if you know how to work the numbers, if you know how to look at things, then you know there's always opportunity out there.
Yeah, some people, it's just not worth trying to explain it to them. I get your point. I try to avoid that, even though that's what I do with my business, is to teach people how to do this. When people I talk to outside that haven't joined up, it's like, I'm not going to talk to you about something you're not even interested enough to look into, type of thing, because really it just goes in one ear and out the other. I just always think it's interesting when you get people that are skeptics, you know, the craziest being somebody going, oh, you're one of those slumlords, huh? That type of stuff. You get any of that, or is that just really something old people used to say?
I have had, not when they didn't know I was an investor, I've had people kind of grumble about landlords and I usually just stay quiet if I don't know them very well, if it's like a acquaintance type situation. But I think that's one of my favorite parts about doing this, is providing a good livable home, nice home for someone to live in at a fair rent. So that's one of my favorite parts, is to do something good for the community and while making a return.
Absolutely. So as we come in to the end of this show here, I'm curious, you said you had two girls, have they gotten to the age yet where they're starting to ask questions about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so I know our oldest, she was interested when she was younger, and now she's looking more at where she wants to go to college and what she wants to do herself. Our youngest is more along the lines of, I hate it when I have to come along for the ride to go look at a new house because it smells bad.
smells like cat pee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely know and are very aware, but at the moment, I don't think either one has an interest in it.
Oh, looks like they're kicking us out. Hey, thanks for coming on, guys, sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Look forward to hearing more of your story in the future. The rest of you out there, keep in mind, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Dell's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.